The artworks to the side there are part of a contest we had this year, which was, I think, the idea of Bruce Mitchell at the University of Waterloo. And those are University of Waterloo art students, fine art students. And we judged them. I was not one of the judges. You can guess which one won. There's a first and second place, which will be part of the CG permanent collection, which now has two works. And the other works, the artists are identified, so if anyone wants to purchase any of them, they're certainly welcome to do so. So I appreciate the support of the University of Waterloo and the Fine Arts Department and Bruce's guidance in this matter. We also had an essay contest on energy. Those artworks are related to energy, as you can probably tell from most of them. There's a turbine, and some are probably more abstract. We had an essay contest for the Association of Former Parliamentarians, and it was for all Canadian universities. It's also on the subject of the energy futures. It's my honor tonight to introduce John Molloy, who was recently re-elected as a member for Kitchener Centre in the provincial government. John has a PhD, a DPhil from Oxford University. He did his thesis on the Atlantic Alliance, and in the Ontario government, he has served as the Parliamentary Secretary for Intergovernmental Affairs, and more recently for colleges and universities. And of course, on Tuesday morning, he will become a cabinet minister. John Molloy.
I'm not sure about that last comment, but anyway, it's an honor and a pleasure to be here this evening. I have the privilege of introducing my colleague, the Minister of Energy, the Honourable Dwight Duncan, who's also the newly re-elected member for the riding of Windsor-Tecumseh. Before doing so, I just want to add my own personal words of welcome and congratulations to the organizers of this wonderful conference. John, what John didn't mention is that I have the privilege of having been one of CG's earliest employees. Although when I worked in here, we didn't have such a grand building. In fact, at that point, the total number of CG employees was four, and we were across the street at the little train station. There were four desks all pulled together, and it was a lot easier to have a CG meeting back then. You just lifted up your head and said, "Hey, everybody," and they went through. But a lot has changed in 5 years, and obviously we all owe a great deal of gratitude to Jim Balsley and the board and John English and his team and the fine work they have done. In a relatively short period of time, CG has established itself as a world-class institution focused on the challenges facing our society, and all those involved deserve a tremendous amount of credit for identifying energy as one of the main areas of concern. Energy issues, as we all know, is one of those complicated files where there's always a temptation for policymakers to put it aside, leave it for the future, or worse, to come up with some short-term band-aid solution to buy some time. Our government, under the leadership of Premier McGuinty and our very special guest tonight, Minister Duncan, has taken a much different approach. Since his appointment as minister in 2003, Minister Duncan has made securing our province's future through the creation of a safe, clean, and sustainable supply of energy his number one priority. He's worked to maximize our existing generation capacity and transmission assets, create new supply, and establish a culture of conservation in our province. And perhaps most importantly, he has displayed a commitment to finding innovative, imaginative, and long-term solutions to our province's energy challenges. He's shown a great deal of interest in the type of research and discussion that is happening through this conference, and when he served as our province's finance minister, presented a budget that invested heavily in Ontario's research and development agenda. Dwight, we welcome you here to this important conference, and we look forward to hearing your thoughts tonight on our energy future. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming the Honourable Dwight Duncan.
Thank you, John, very much for that kind introduction, and it is great to be here tonight. I had a text prepared, but over dinner conversation, I realized that it just wasn't the right text. So I'm going to spend a few minutes talking to you about next steps in Ontario and where I think we need to go. And I do it with a certain sense of modesty because, you know, as an energy minister in a subnational government, you sit next to Louise Frechette and you read her op-ed piece in the Globe and Mail today, you realize how big the questions are that we're dealing with. But I do want to talk to you about some of those questions and how I think they need to be addressed. First of all, Jim, Premier McGuinty asked me to say to you, thank you for your tremendous commitment, for all you do. He wishes he could be here, but you got number two this tonight. But he wanted me to personally say to you, thanks so much for CG, for all you do, not only for this community, but indeed for our province and our country. Thank you very, very much. Prime Minister Martin, it is always good to see you. I don't know how many of you know this, but I represent the same riding that Paul Martin Sr. represented so ably for many years, and our friendship goes back many, many years, and I look forward to many, many more years of that friendship and good advice that you've offered me over the years and the assistance and support you've provided us. You know, Ontario and Canada are a very small player in the world nuclear industry. Today, worldwide, there are 250 new reactors at various stages of development throughout the world. In Ontario, we believe that we need to build two new reactors. We may have to do more depending on our ability to refurb the four reactors at Pickering B. Now, one of the challenges governments are going to face is there's not enough capacity in the world to build those reactors in the time frame they're needed. That is a huge challenge. So it's not good enough to talk strictly about nuclear. You have to do it in the context of all forms of energy, recognizing that the people of the world, particularly the developed world, are rapidly rejecting coal-fired technology. The biggest business, energy business decision this year in the United States, the company TSX was taken private. Part of that deal, that company was going to build 11 new coal-fired generating stations. Part of that deal was to axe 8 of them because public opinion would not accept more coal in a developed country. We have made the decision to move off coal. We have to eliminate our carbon footprint. We were wrong about how long it would take us. And it is a challenging and daunting effort for a whole variety of reasons. Let me start by saying, and I've now had the opportunity to travel through most of the world, meet with some of the best engineers and technical people around, and none of the so-called clean coal technologies is clean. None of them get CO2. None of them get mercury. None of them get particulate. Carbon sequestration is promising, but it's not commercially viable, and it's dependent on your geology. For instance, it makes some sense in Alberta to sequester it and pump it into the ground to help raise oil. The only place we think we can put it in Ontario is in aquifers. And we're not even sure that that will work. A friend of mine said it'd be kind of like turning the Great Lakes into a spritzer. To outfit our existing coal plants with the so-called clean coal technologies will cost $1.5 billion, will take 5 years to install, and you simply can't go and slap these things onto existing plants. You have to rebuild the plants from the ground up. Now, in Ontario, we don't mine coal. We don't sell coal. We import coal. Most of it's imported from the United States. So we think it's a good idea to move off. And let me tell you one of the economic side benefits, quite apart from the public health issues, quite apart from the desire to reduce carbon overall. If we close our five coal plants, and when we close them by 2014, we will meet 80% of Ontario's Kyoto commitment with that simple step. That takes pressure off the forestry sector. It takes pressure off the automotive sector. It is a balanced and sensible way to contribute in a major way to our future. Now, I was telling the Prime Minister, you know, back in the 1960s, the old Ontario Hydro advertised and said that nuclear power was going to be so cheap, we wouldn't have to meter it. And we turned our attention away from hydroelectric. We turned our attention away from, at that time, virtually undeveloped technologies in wind and solar. Ontario's gone from last to first in non-hydro renewable in the last 4 years, and we're poised to become, according to the New York Times, the leading jurisdiction in North America on everything from wind to biomass, anaerobic digesters. I don't know how many of you have heard of anaerobic digesters. I like to call it poop to power. Farmers put these digesters in, they take the manure, and they turn it into methane, and they produce power. The town of Lucan, Ontario, is entirely powered by an anaerobic digester today. We all know what caused Walkerton. We all know that there's an environmental challenge with manure. And it's cheap, renewable, affordable power. We're now leading not only North America, but the world. On wind, we've gone from last to first in Canada. On solar, we are in the process of building Canada's largest solar farm, North America's largest solar farm, and we think the largest solar farm in the world, just outside of Sarnia. There are somewhere between 2,000 and 5,000 megawatts of undeveloped, clean, run-of-the-river hydroelectric power in Ontario, which we have to take advantage of. But at the end of the day, no matter how you add it up, no matter how aggressively you pursue wind and solar and conservation, and we are aggressively pursuing conservation, our peak demand this summer went down 5%. It's the first time that's ever happened, in spite of a growing economy. No matter how you cut it, you have to have nuclear. There is no question about that. 50% of the power in this room tonight is coming from our nuclear power plants. It's been like that in Ontario for the better part of 40 years. Our reactor fleet is aging. It's going to take anywhere from 10 to 15 years to build new, probably 7 to 10 years to refurbish existing. And that is in a global context of more than 250 reactors being developed worldwide. The next decisions we have to make as a province and as a society are fundamental. Whose technology do we use? What technology do we use? There are essentially four suppliers in the world today, and in terms of what's happening here, because of discussions between GE and AECL, there's essentially three potential suppliers. They are all offering technologies that are new and on the drawing board. It's kind of like when you buy your BlackBerry. You know, I've got one now that's a couple years old. Every time I think I'm going to go buy a new one, I think, well, maybe I'll wait a little longer because the next one out will be even better. We don't have the time. The decisions we are making today should have been made 10 years ago. We literally have the gun to our head. And interestingly, the problem south of the border is actually much greater than ours. I had the opportunity earlier this year to meet with senior officials in the United States, and the first question they asked me is, will we be in a position to export more power to the United States by the mid part of the next decade? First time I ever felt like an Albertan. But the fact is, we have that opportunity. And so we are moving cautiously but prudently forward. You know, during the election, some people said we should buy more nuclear and do it faster. We were the first out of the gate. Environmental assessments are underway. And you know, the nuclear industry is not universally well received everywhere. We are going to have to dot every I and cross every T, and politically, we have got to be able to say to the hockey moms and dads out there that we're maximizing wind power, we're maximizing solar power, we're maximizing hydroelectric, we're the best in the world at conservation. Because I'm convinced politically if we do that, the people of this province, particularly with our history, know and understand that it's part of the future. Our premier, our government, we're not cheerleading for the nuclear industry. We are simply pragmatic. And we want to do what's right. So, in the next year or so, Ontario is going to have to decide whose technology. It's going to have to decide which technology. I mean, again, we may have to purchase something that's never been built before. Or run the risk of building something that's obsolete before it opens. And that begs a whole range of other questions. Back in the 1960s, Ontario simply bought reactors from the old ACL, and that was the end of it. That won't happen this time. Risk has to be shared. Construction risk, operating risk, first-of-a-kind risk. One of the reasons our nuclear performance is so poor relative to other jurisdictions is we have some of the oldest reactors. And we're still getting 80-85% efficiency. But that is a key issue that we will have to determine. You know, some of our opponents said, just close nuclear, close coal, and do it with solar and wind and biomass and conservation. That's 71% of our power supply. And if the technology develops in the future that allows us better ways of doing it, of course we'll buy into that technology. So we have a lot to do. And you know, Jim, the work you do here, the work your partner Mike does at the Perimeter Institute, he invited me over there when I first became energy minister, and he said to me, if we can make equals MC square apply to the quark the way we can to the atom, we will solve the world's energy problem. He said, Mike, my grade 11 physics teacher passed me on condition that I never take another physics course. And that's probably why the Premier put me in charge of Ontario's nuclear program. But I mean, there will be exciting developments. But we have to move forward practically in a limited time frame because, as I said earlier, the gun is to our head. And so as we move forward, we want to get Ontario the best deal. We want to make sure that we get the best reactor at the best price. And, by the way, not to be forgotten, is that we create the most economic development opportunity. It's not enough to simply buy technology. We want to buy that technology, but we want to manufacture it. We want to lead the world, as we've led in so many other areas. And it's a growing and burgeoning world, as you all know. Our energy future is brighter today than it was 4 years ago. I can see the day where Ontario, we were, by the way, last year, we were a net exporter of power for the first time in 8 years. And I predict we'll be the same this year. I can see the day when Ontario will be a net exporter of power to the United States by even more than we are today. It was just marginal the last 2 years. But it requires decisions now. Decisions that are not easy, but decisions that must be made. And one last opportunity, because I see a former prime minister here, I see a number of former federal cabinet ministers. In this country today, we have enormous hydroelectric opportunities in the north of Manitoba, in Newfoundland and Labrador, yet we don't have the transmission system to bring that power to the consumer markets of southern Ontario. On a peak day last summer, we were spending somewhere between $300 and $400 a megawatt hour of power. That's 30, to put it in the context of your hydro bill at home, $30 a kilowatt at peak time to buy coal-fired generation from the United States when we have these enormous opportunities in our country. You know, the hydroelectric system can be the railway of the 21st century if we simply bring the political will to bear. I would much rather spend that money in Newfoundland and Labrador. I would much rather spend that money in Manitoba. And by the way, they need enormous quantities of electricity to develop the tar sands. We have that opportunity. And don't take my word for it. TransCanada Pipeline says unequivocally that it's economic and doable. New technology allows us to bring power across much greater distances than we could even 10, 15 years ago. And by the way, it will open up Hudson's Bay and James Bay for wind development. It will be an economic boom for our First Nations. I had the opportunity to meet First Nations leaderships in northern Manitoba, northern Quebec, northern Ontario. There are still 75 communities in northern Ontario that are powered by diesel. It is contributing to what we all acknowledge to be a great Canadian disgrace. And we have the technology today that we can run these high-powered lines and cut into them and serve and service those communities with cheaper, cleaner power if we can only bring to bear the political willingness to do it. I believe the willingness is there. I think all of us, Ontarians, Quebecers, Manitobans, Albertans, Newfoundlanders, I think we all want it. I think we all see the benefit, particularly in a world that is concerned about carbon. So with all of those things on the horizon, not only is the future bright for Ontario, it is for our country. And as the Prime Minister said, we can be and are an energy superpower. We can be a power superpower if we do it right. We have that opportunity here in Ontario. We have that opportunity as Canadians. We have that opportunity with great organizations like this, pulling together great minds to think about the future, to think about the impact beyond our borders as well as within our borders. We have the ability. Now we need the political wherewithal and the commitment to do it. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been an honor to speak to such a distinguished group. Jim, to you and everyone associated with CG, thank you so much and congratulations on your great work. Thank you.
Wow. Integrity reeks. First of all, thank you so much for deviating from the script and just filling us with such integrity. I was enjoying my dessert so much until you started talking about the anaerobic digester. I would like to thank Barb and her colleagues from the RBC for the integrity of supporting this evening and all of the support on the trilateral and at RIM. And for the CIC, my first call was to Gord, and then when Gord said, "I'm not so sure," I called Barb, and then Gord said yes. So, Barb, thank you very much. Thank you.
when, just a couple real quickies also, when we're trying to do this CIC stuff, my first call out west was to Hal Kissel of TCPL, and he jumped aboard and he's helped doing a dinner, in 3-4 weeks where we're gonna make sure the rest of Calgary jumps aboard the CIC on these kinds of things. So, that's excellent. And it was kind of interesting talking about technologies. I've never told anyone this, but I paid for my dad was a tradesman. I paid for my university education refining uranium at El Dorado Nuclear. So I refined uranium dioxide for CANDU reactors and then uranium hexafluoride for the rest of the world. That's how I got to pay for school. So this is very relevant to me. But seriously, as Dalton says, good policy is good politics. And I thank you so much for your interest and support and his support and the integrity you bring to this file. And thank you so much for taking the time and coming and joining us this evening. Thank you. Good night. Thank you very much.